Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
This week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe is our 250th episode spectacular. We'll be talking about Suicide Squad, summer movies, and more.
Do you think that we're getting free hot dogs with this?
I've ordered them already, so I hope so. I get a rebate.
Because if there's no free hot dogs, then this is a worthless promotion.
Let's just get all the mustard out there.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, hi, how are you?
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 250. 250.
I think that's a quarter of a century old.
Yeah.
That's not accurate.
No. Doing the show for 4 years, so, you know, that's something. 5 years? I forget. Whatever. 5 years? Yes, 5 years.
5 years.
5 years. Yeah. And change.
But yeah, we're in Spanish, cinco.
We've got, thank you. We've gotten to this point, Abe. We've gotten to episode 250 in episodic numbers.
Yes.
We've surpassed this.
I think we're at 300 and something.
Yeah, so compare when we take away all the commentaries and bonus episodes we do, yeah, we've got to 250 finally, I guess, episodic-wise. And for the 250th episode, we have some special plans in store for later on in the show. Our main review, though, is going to be for Suicide Squad, the latest entry in the DC Extended Universe. And joining us to discuss Suicide Squad and various other things during this epic 250th episode, we have, from Forbes, he's gotten used to being called Puddin', it's Scott Mendelson.
Always good to be back. Another milestone.
That's a very sweet nickname, Scott. Puddin'?
Yes, thank you.
Puddin'.
Yeah.
But yeah, Scott, good to have you here, as always. And yeah, you've been with us for quite a while in this podcast.
It's almost the beginning.
Yeah. And yeah, we're
good. Scott, do you still run Mendelsohn's memos?
No, I gave up after about a month.
Yeah, the periodic updates on Mendelsohn memos are no more.
I thought it was a weekly update.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get this going. Let's get into the show here.
Let's throw some coal into the fire.
Let's throw some coal into the fire, exactly, for our epic 250th episode. Let's get to some show notes first. Commentary track, it is August, which is a new month following our previous month's commentary track, which means that there'll be a new one coming on the way at some point. There's been some ideas being thrown around, so we'll get back to that soon enough. Let's see. iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out the show, helps other people find the show. If you want to log into iTunes, search Out Now with Aaron and Abe, give us a star rating, and you know, maybe write a review. That'd be great.
Yeah, thank you very much in advance.
As far as show notes go, okay, Abe, I started this like a few weeks back, and
uh-huh.
Another one to add here, but I started this thing called Favorite Movie Editions.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember this?
Yeah, and this is where periodically, because I believe for our 150th episode, 100 episodes ago, you and I, as well as Scott, we all went, and others, we went over our favorite movies of all time. And mm-hmm. that is a list where, you know, obviously things shift around and what have you, but there are, you know, it's not impossible for other movies to make it onto said list, and I figured why not have a section of the show where if we happen to think of something that, you know, jars into mind or just suddenly thinks of like, hey, this is the thing, favorite movie additions, where we'd add a movie to that list of movies. And I have another one.
Okay.
It's for a movie that we reviewed on this show.
Battle LA.
A movie that we like very, very much.
Scream 4.
It is Paranorman.
Oh, yes.
I
do like that movie a lot.
I've seen this movie a lot at this point, and
at least five times.
Every time I watch it, I just feel like it's almost perfect in my eyes, and I am going to the point of thinking I'm going to add this to my list of favorite movies because I absolutely adore Paranorman. I think it's a fantastic movie.
So it's on the wall now.
It's on the wall now, exactly.
Okay. And you still brush your teeth and foam at the mouth and pretend you're a zombie like Paranorman.
Sometimes I don't even brush my teeth.
You just foam at the mouth?
Yeah, exactly.
You might want to get that checked out.
You think so?
It's a 50-50 toss-up. You should ask Anna.
Okay, I will. All right. So there you go. That's the latest addition.
Paranorman. Bum, 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 bum.
Yes. Well, yeah. Eventually that theme music will really kick in there. And it'll make sense. But yeah, let's move on now. Let's get to some Know Everybody.
Okay.
Where each week we ask each other a question or two, try to set the tone for the podcast, or better get to Know Everybody. All right. Abe, you have a question?
I do, for you guys both here, weapon of choice in a gang fight.
A gang fight?
Yeah.
Boomerangs.
You choose boomerangs?
Obviously, right?
I mean, they take a little while to come back. That's, you know. Yeah, do you have multiple?
Well, if you get off the first one and it's a good hit, then you got some time, right?
All right.
Scott, flamethrower.
Flamethrower. You're going for total destruction.
Well, I want to kill them and get out.
This is true. See, Scott thinking on his feet as always. Good question.
Your good question. That's what you're propping it on?
Yeah.
Okay. My question.
Yep.
Name three bad guys you want to see on a team together.
Three bad guys?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Bon Voyage.
Yep.
I also want to see. Would you call Dennis Leary's character a bad guy from Ice Age, or is he a good guy by the end of the movie?
He's a good guy.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'll choose Dennis.
Your mind went to this, for one thing. Is what?
Yeah, where the hell did that come from?
Diego, I believe, is his name as well.
What's his name?
Diego.
Diego, right. So who do I have? Bon Voyage. I actually really think that Tyrannosaurus Rex would be also a good addition.
Okay.
And then...
Not the new one? The cooler one?
The original one from We're Back.
What? That evil John Goodman, We're Back.
Yeah, lastly, the grandmother from The Visit, because she freaks me out. So those three would probably be able to take on anybody.
That requires some thought.
And bring it on, Scott. My team is pretty good.
Don't think about thought. Just think three villains that came into your mind right away and shout them out.
Jason Voorhees, Mike Myers, and Leatherface.
There you go.
Quiet movie.
I'd run away from that one.
It's a nice quiet movie.
The long scenes of them trying to plan their attack and not speaking.
They all coordinate. They all synchronize their watches before they go out killing, too, because they all want to be on 10.
Yes.
Aaron, do you have a dream team? Tweety Bird?
I didn't think of answering this question myself. Wile E. Coyote, Anton Chigurh, and Christoph Waltz and Inglourious Basterds.
So two people who don't talk that much, and then a guy who talks a whole lot. Yeah. Cool. Sounds great.
Interesting.
Well, that's how you play.
No, everybody. Thank you, Abe. Let's get to Out Now Quickies.
Tim?
Each week Out Now, Abe, maybe the Out Now Quickies.
Tim?
I'll admit it.
Wasn't bad. I didn't hear any gaps.
Okay. Fair enough. Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
Haven't seen any other movies this week. Wanted to watch Little Prince, but I want to watch it later at night when the sky is dark so I don't get distracted by the sunlight. But I did finish BoJack Horseman Season 3, and it's good. You know, Season 1 and 2 I think are a little bit stronger, but Season 3 is not a bad addition either.
I haven't finished Season 3 yet, but I did watch the Under the Sea episode.
Episode 4, yeah.
Episode 4. That's on the level of, like... There's like, you know, there's lots of animated shows that I love, but there's, you know, certain episodes of animated series that I think are, like, amazing for reasons beyond just, like, the basic premise of the show, like comedy or what have you, but, like, just, like, an emotional kind of connection to it. And, like, I compare that to something like Futurama's Jurassic Bark episode, an episode that'll just make you cry when you watch that episode of Futurama. I feel like that episode of BoJack Horseman's like, that's an episode that removes a key element, which is crazy voice acting from various characters, and has mostly the animation and what's going on in
the story. You should also watch Shaun the Sheep if you're interested in movies with no dialogue.
Yeah. I've continued to want to see it and yet to get around to it.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a really strong episode in a season that I'm liking so far. I just haven't got through it yet.
Cool.
Scott, have you seen any other movie you want to talk about?
Yes, I saw Tallulah. That's the Netflix picture with Ellen Page and Allison Janney about a young homeless woman that basically kidnaps a baby after she finds that the mother that is lacking in parental skills. Very good, you know, very small scale character piece. I saw Kubo and the Two Strings, which is awesome.
The upcoming Leica film that Abe and I cannot be more excited for.
Yes, that's accurate.
Terrific. Beats Dragon is awesome as well.
Oh, that's also a surprise. I mean,
yeah,
let's keep this in mind right now. When Abe says that's a surprise, that means
to me
because you have been
I was
against this movie for whatever reason. Which
I don't know about horribly against, but I was
back to an episode where you quote
we
said
about the trailer
said yeah nothing you thought way too much was happening and you hope that we wouldn't have to review it on the podcast.
I mean, this is also how I feel about Monster Truck, but I'm interested in Monster Truck.
Well, you didn't say. I hope we don't review it on the podcast. I've heard nothing but excellent things about Peach Dragon.
All right, well,
yeah, it's terrific.
We'll give it a go.
I saw Cafe Society was fine. Whatever, the cast is great, and that's why you're going there anyway. Nine Lives, best movie of the year. It's the great savior of the summer that we've all been waiting for.
Oh wow! Congratulations, Kevin Spacey. You're
yeah.
back.
It's his best work since Apex.
Apex.
And no, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, my daughter liked it. It's stupid and every. I mean, it's exactly what you expect it to be. No more, no less.
Chris Walken dance in it?
He does.
Oh, then we got to see it.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's having fun. Honestly, the only part of the film that is aggressively bad is Kevin Spacey's performance. Which is very broad and over the top.
Really? I would not have guessed that, actually.
Yeah. I don't know whether it just he didn't care or it was badly directed, although it's very Seinfeld, so. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And Equity is excellent. It's a thriller set in the financial market. The gimmick being it's mostly involving women, female stockbrokers, female. You know, in white collar crime cops. It's very, you know, it's very buttoned down, but it works. If it ever expands beyond four theaters, go see it.
All right.
That's about it.
That's enough quickies.
Jim?
I'm not done.
Oh, you said quickies though, so I gotta add the TM every time.
You got me. You got me there.
Wait, was that Rodney Dangerfield?
It's a mix of Rodney Dangerfield and Robin Williams.
Okay.
It's the R comedians. I've seen a few things this week. I saw The Little Prince, which is on Netflix now. Mm-hmm. I watched this with my lovely girlfriend, and it is quite good. I really admire the amount of effort that seems to have gone in what must have been a fairly small-scale production compared to, you know, other animated features that, you know, get the wide release. This movie famously was basically dropped by Paramount.
Dropped by Paramount the week that it was going to be released.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's very successful in what it does. I haven't read the original French story from, like, the 1940s, but I certainly want to, and I'm very much enamored with the kind of work that went into making both a CG animated film as well as a stop-motion animated film. And the way the story plays out, it's very, very, very nice. I really like how this film functions. I've also saw a couple other films this week. I saw a movie called Kicks.
Don't know this one.
It's set in Oakland. It's about a high school kid who gets new Nike Jordans and they're taken from him.
Oh yes, I have seen this trailer.
It's based around. The environment he lives in Oakland.
It's set up in the Bay.
Yeah, it's up in the Bay.
Yeah. It's like Richmond or Oakland.
He lives in Richmond, actually. Yes. Yeah. And it's basically like it's like watching Dope if Dope was a straight drama and no comedy whatsoever. That said, it hinges on a few kind of plot contrivances to get it going and whatnot. And it's overall it's fine, but it's still worthwhile, especially for a debut film. There's some neat stuff in there as far as kind of visual quirks and what have you. I also saw another movie, somewhat by mistake. So I was
what? How does that happen?
I was originally supposed
was it
to
X-rated?
I was originally supposed to see Hell or High Water, the Chris Pine, Ben Foster, Jeff Bridges modern Western. Yeah, but I mixed up my screening times, and so I missed that one and walked into a different movie instead called The People versus Fritz Bauer. This is a film about a German Jew after World War II who's been assigned to basically kind of investigating a lot of the like Nazis and SS soldiers that have kind of gone back into either hiding or back into kind of work after the war. And it's about a famous case about one of the this lawyer, Fritz Bauer, who's trying to extradite one of the top like SS commanders who was largely part of the Final Solution, extraditing him from Argentina to get him back over to Germany. And as far as the kind of historical significance behind it, that's an interesting story to walk into at random.
And yeah.
The movie overall, it's fine. It kind of lacks forward momentum in the first half. And so by the time it gets to the second half, it gets more engaging, but there's kind of a lack of more excitement that I would have kind of liked in how it set itself up. That's not for lack of trying on part of the actors or even the work known with the film. But I mean, even for me, who I like, and Scott, you love this movie too, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. That's a movie that's like deadly slow in what it's doing. But there's like kind of there's a rhythm to that pacing that still works for it. This movie, it kind of feels a little disjointed as far as giving me a story that I can really engage with before getting to kind of the meat of the plot. That said, for a movie I walked into at random, I was pretty happy with like what the story took, because I didn't know what it was. And so I was like, all right, well, there we go. That's enough weeks.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk, where each week we talk about one of the newest movie trailers, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. We only have so much to talk about with this trailer for Dunkirk, the upcoming Christopher Nolan World War II drama. But you know what? We're going to talk about it anyway because it's a new Christopher Nolan film, so why not? The film, the story surrounds the Allied soldiers from Belgium, Britain, Canada, and France who are surrounded by German army during a fierce battle in World War II and the kind of evacuation attempt based off a very true story. And Christopher Nolan, of course, he's writing, directing, and shooting with 70mm and IMAX cameras. It has Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy, Mark Rylance, Kenneth Branagh. I assume Michael Caine's in there somewhere. Presumably as Hitler. I don't know. And of course, Harry Styles from One Direction. I can't, you know, not
of
say
Of course.
That.
Is he really in the movie?
Yeah, it's his acting debut.
Okay.
He had to shave his head and everything.
Oh,
I learned all this. I learned all this from the IMDb trivia section. with little to go on, I'm still going to ask, Scott, what did you think of the trailer for Dunkirk?
Well, obviously it's an announcement trailer, or announcement teaser. There's very little to go on. You know, it's a cryptic Chris Nolan trailer. I think it looks fine. I mean, I'm not necessarily, oh, goody, another World War II movie. I'm sure it'll look very nice. I'm sure it will stand out amid the franchise tentpoles we're going to get next summer. And that will be biggest trump card, other than, you know, it's a Chris Nolan movie. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I think it looks good. I'm sure it'll be fine. As far as...
Are you sure it'll be fine? I mean, you haven't liked the past couple Christopher Nolan
films. Fine as an okay, you know, whatever.
You still haven't liked the past couple Christopher Nolan movies.
Fine is a loose term.
Okay.
Duly noted.
I mean, I didn't hate Dark Knight Rises. I'm disappointed with it. I didn't hate Interstellar. I just didn't think it was all that good. And I had issues with it. It is interesting, you know, how much Chris Nolan is worth when he's A, telling a true story. So there's no, wrong director, I know, but mystery box. There's no secrets untold. What's going to happen? Plot twist, yada, yada, yada. Well, you can look it up in Encyclopedia Britannica or Wikipedia. The other thing is, you know, there are no big stars in this one. You know, Inception had Leonardo DiCaprio. Interstellar had Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain. This one has the kid from One Direction. And I think Tom Hardy, I mean, yeah, he's a name, but he's not an opener. Citizen X made like $5.
Well, I guess you would have to argue that Christopher Nolan is the name that sells this.
Exactly.
Movie. And he's one of those. He's one of those few directors that kind of can at this point.
This is a Hateful Eight situation. How much is he worth all by himself in a film that is perhaps less explicitly commercial than Adventures in Dreamland or Adventures in Space?
Space.
And again, I'm not saying that to be dismissive. I'm genuinely curious how this is going to play, because he is, to a certain extent, outside of his comfort zone.
True. And I'm curious as well. I mean, it is a summer movie. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously it's not a traditional summer movie as far as what you'd expect from a summer blockbuster, but it's a movie being released in the middle of summer, middle of July, that's focused on World War II. And the only one I can think of that compares is Saving Private Ryan, which obviously, you know, that was, I believe it was the biggest grosser of that year, if not Armageddon, maybe.
No, it was.
It was the biggest grosser of the year.
A whole $213 million.
Yeah.
Those are the days.
Yeah, right. And I mean, that movie obviously has Spielberg and Tom Hanks as far, and a pretty giant. I mean, Tom Hanks, you know, the name.
And Matt Damon coming off of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you have, you know, the, you have names involved with that one, I guess. But
no, that was a Zeit picture, without question.
And it'll be curious. I mean, Nolan tends to be a filmmaker who can capture the zeitgeist to an extent. So it'll be curious to see what he manages to pull out from that. Basically, I'm saying I'm very interested in this movie. I obviously, there's very little to go off here besides just images. But the idea of Christopher Nolan doing an epic World War II movie using his 70 millimeters, his IMAX cameras and all that. I'm intrigued just from hearing Christopher Nolan's making a new movie. So hearing him doing, you know, he's going to do all this. Sure. Let's see where that goes. Abe, what'd you think?
I thought, again, not a whole lot to go off of, but there's some pretty nice cinematography. Like what you said, Aaron, he's shooting it in 5mm IMAX. And, hey, you know, it's another Christopher Nolan movie, but I'm kind of bracing myself for it to be 2 hours and 30 minutes long. And that's something that I'm not really looking forward to. That being said, hey, why? I'm going to wait. Because 2 hours and 30 minutes is a long time, especially if they're going to go through this very, very convoluted storyline.
But did you hate Interstellar?
I didn't hate it, but I did feel the length of it.
Did you hate Saving Private Ryan?
No, but that one, that was like 3 hours or something long.
Yeah, that was pretty long.
Yeah.
It's 48, some 255.
I guess just in general, Christopher Nolan movies, they tend to be a little bit longer.
Long.
Than,
yeah.
Yeah. Which it works for some of them. Some of them, they feel a little bit less epic, so it kind of drags to some degree. But with that being said, I'm interested in this one. I am curious about it. And the production design looks very, very good, and the cinematography looks very good. I enjoyed the wisps of soapy water from the sand on the beach. So we'll see what happens.
Can you write more poetry about the thoughts on the trailer after the show, Abe?
I will. I'll write a haiku.
Just on the plus side, Abe, yeah. At worst, the film will be no longer than 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Because IMAX can't hold that much.
I'll write that on my palm when I go see it.
Dunkirk arrives in theaters July 21st, 2017, and I'm sure we'll talk about at least one more trailer from this movie before we just stop watching.
When we see the full-length one, we'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah. All right, so with all that out of the way, let's move on to our main review now for Suicide Squad.
I want to build a team of some very bad people who I think can do some good.
Y'all jokers must be crazy. I'm not just one of y'all.
This is the deal. You disobey me, you die. Try to escape, you die.
You got a boyfriend?
You irritate or vex me.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
You die.
If they get caught, we throw them under the bus.
What a ride!
That should have been some of the trailer for Suicide Squad. We are back in the DC Extended Universe with Suicide Squad from director David Ayer. The idea for this film involves Viola Davis's Amanda Waller assembling a group of supervillains, including Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, Captain Boomerang, and others, to fight major world threats. This plan goes south immediately as potential members of the Suicide Squad cause the major destruction needing to be solved, meaning the team has to go in and stop it themselves. Will they save the day as well as the DC Universe? Scott, we're three films deep into the official DCEU at this point.
My thoughts on this film were somewhere between Superman screams after killing Zod in Man of Steel and Superman screams after Lois Lane dies at the end of Superman the movie. Sorry, I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, that's a basic lead into my
question. That's a lot of screaming.
I guess I want to ask, where can we? Obviously, I think that you're not a fan of this movie.
No,
we'll get to what Abe and I thought in a second, but I don't think you're a fan of this movie. And I have to wonder, what are your expectations for the universe going forward? And what do you think of this film?
I was not a fan of Man of Steel, but there was much to like in that picture. I think it eventually kind of went off the rails. This was 3 years ago or whatever. I was not a huge fan of Batman v Superman, but I felt there was much to admire in the picture. The ambition, the scope, the majesty and, right, you know, some of the characters, some of the ideas. It was a flawed presentation of an interesting concept. This film, oh God, it is bad enough that, if not for the fact that Wonder Woman looks so different, and from what I gather was pretty much set in stone before Batman v Superman even came out, I would otherwise just throw my hands up in the air and say, okay, I give up. You know, hit me with whatever you got. You can't hurt me anymore. This is a dreadful, dreadful picture. This is probably the worst, you know, this is the worst DC Comics movie since Catwoman.
Damn!
And I don't say that lightly.
No, I know, that's fine.
You know, as I wrote in my review, I feel like Charlie Brown. You know, every time they hold out the damn football, they go, okay, Lucy's not going to pull it this time. Lucy's not going to pull it next time. And she pulled the damn football again. Viola Davis is excellent in this film. She is fun. Margot Robbie is as good as she can be in a film that constantly treats her like a piece of ass. All due respect. Mm-hmm. Jared Leto is fine as a relatively, you know, he's not in it much, and that's fine. His Joker is basically Swiper the Fox in this film. He shows up just to, you know, that's not a criticism, man. It's fine.
No, I just like
he shows up just sort of mess stuff up every once in a while, you know, when the film's getting a little, you know, whatever. Will Smith is fine. It's a strong movie star performance. It's clear the film was cut after the fact to emphasize Deadshot at the expense of Harley Quinn and the Joker. That's been all but confirmed.
Well, we almost pulled it off, despite what everybody thought. Worst part of it is they're going to blame us for the whole thing. And they can't have people knowing the truth. We're the patsies, the cover-up. Don't forget, we're the bad guys.
But other than that, this movie has basically nothing to recommend. The plot doesn't make a lick of sense from A to B to C. The first act of the film, if not the first half of the film, is basically the same scene told like six times. Viola Davis walks into a room and says, "We need to be prepared if the next Superman's evil. I'm going to assemble a group of villains to help fight off, you know, metahuman threats." A variation on that is done at least three times. Several of the main characters are introduced at least three times. Mm-hmm. And then we think, okay, the mission's about to start. Now this movie's going to get good. We are wrong. That is an incorrect presumption on our part. Because the film turns into a very boring, generic zombie video game. Without going into details, the villain, who is very boring and doesn't make a lot of sense, and is basically a ripoff of Ghostbusters Zool, is it? Zool? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Zool.
Yes.
Basically, she turns innocent bystanders into CGI blobs, which means that the Suicide Task Force X can shoot and stab and blow them up and still get their PG-13 rating, but it also means that all of the action in this film is watching our anti-heroes kill innocent people, right, which is lots of fun. But the film isn't even doesn't even acknowledge that. You know, if the film acknowledged that nasty bit of business as being, oh, this is why it's edgy, it's whatever, that would be one thing. You know, for a film about the Suicide Squad, and I've been making this joke all weekend, the film is about it. You know, it's less cynical and less nihilistic than an episode of Teen Titans Go. I don't know if you've ever watched that show. Very funny, and all the heroes in it are selfish, narcissistic bastards of the highest order, and it's great. I mean, it's this weird, it's for kids, it's very, you're right, it's very popcorn bubblegummy, but the characters are horrible, horrible people. They fit right into the, you know, quote-unquote Zack Snyder murderverse. I mean, you could totally picture that version of Robin working with Ben Affleck's Batman. But this film feels like a Suicide Squad film after it was studio noted to death so it would be more I don't know, life-affirming, heartwarming. These people aren't villains. They're proverbial hookers with a heart of gold. You know, you have this weird situation where you have Batman and Superman that are basically anti-heroes, and you have the Suicide Squad that are basically nice guys. All of that would be forgivable if the film weren't so boring and incomprehensible. But it is boring and incomprehensible. It's not particularly funny. It's not particularly exciting. There's no suspense. There's no tension. Very little clever dialogue. There is, other than those four lead performances, and a few moments where Viola Davis gets to shine, or there's a very nice early flashback involving Deadshot and Ben Affleck's Batman that works on its own terms. But other than that, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing.
We'll get back to that nothing. Abe, what did you think of this?
Nothing!
In a phrase, this is a lot of style over substance, and I definitely, you know, agree with a lot of Scott's points. I don't dismiss any of them. I certainly thought that there was a whole lot of nothing in this movie, aside from, for whatever reason, strange musical cues that don't really give you a sense of, you know, great thought and care put into the music with the scene. It's just more of like, here's a cool hip song that we'll just throw in there, and we'll get people's feet tapping. And sure, yeah, you know, my head was nodding, my feet were tapping, but it doesn't really work that well. In any case, you know, I thought the setup was actually kind of decent, and I don't mean that in a way of, wow, this is, you know, well thought out. It's just more of like, it's actually a very thin plot, but it's a direct plot, meaning we'll get this group of bad guys, and we'll go and defeat this ultra super villain, which is a stupid plot to begin with anyway. It's very, very weak, but hey, you know, they just went with it and whatever else. But they get rid of a lot of characters very easily, which I didn't like, including another group of, like, Navy SEALs that just disappeared from the movie.
An indeterminate number, because they vary from scene to scene how many there are with them.
That is true. The thing that really bothered me a lot was strange editing, and I think that there was probably, like, three or four cut sequences, which really ruins the flow of what they're doing on screen in that particular time. And they cut back to, like, storylines, like what Scott was saying. They give you more characters, character development, when you don't really care or you don't really need it. And that was, I thought, a misuse of their talents there. Weak villain, ultra weak villain. And for whatever reason, why did this villain choose to do this now? It seems like they could have carried out their plot at any point in which they were being forced to live under some sort of cell. It's also strange that I agree with Scott, it kind of just turns into like the Mummy movie at the end of the movie. And I definitely did not like the way that they set up the universe to say, hey, you know, Superman comes down and he's got these powers, and we now have to think about contingency plans the way that all the other movies worked. But, like, to Scott's point, which I definitely felt, there's a lot of dead, innocent people in this movie, which is a huge detriment because they don't acknowledge it, and they don't really acknowledge how they're going to deal with that after the fact.
What makes that worse is that, they're talking about how Superman means that we need to have more protection, yet the plan they have for protection is the problem. Like, that's what creates the reason there's all these dead bodies. If Amanda Waller didn't create this team, there wouldn't be all these dead bodies.
Yeah, I mean, that is accurate. And they actually kind of allude to it in one scene where they're saying, hey, you know, that's an expensive watch. Like, well, it belonged to, like, some innocent dude. It's like, yeah, that kind of sucks. Because that guy, he probably has a family somewhere. In any case, it's also a dark picture. I didn't really get a good sense of the action because it's all set at nighttime. And with
fog and smoke screens everywhere.
Yeah, and to go along with that, there's not really a cool action sequence. I mean, there's one with Will Smith kind of going badass, but
where he puts his mask on for no reason.
Yeah, that was kind of
where he puts his mask on so they don't have to pay Will Smith that day.
Yes,
so they could use his stunt double, right? Lastly, I mean, quite honestly, there's kind of just like this gremlin scene, which Aaron, you know, I've talked about many times, where they kind of just jam in some sort of strange emotional plot device in a very strange part of the movie, and that's kind of what happened during a bar scene. For whatever reason, I was just like, why are you doing this? You know, David Ayer, I totally get what you're doing, but you can't build humanity for all these people. And then very much, this is something that Scott brought to my attention too, like, why are you even trying to build humanity for these villains? You know, if you want them to be villains, then have them be villains. You can't have them be anti-heroes, or you can't have them be, you know, like, Scott, I forget your exact phrase, but something with a heart of gold.
Hooker with a heart of gold.
Hooker with a heart of gold, yeah. So, you know, I certainly felt as though they were trying to go for a fun movie. I really wanted a fun movie as well, especially with the way that DC has going. And Scott, I'm on the opposite fence. You know, with Wonder Woman, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm kind of bracing myself for a letdown for Wonder Woman as well, which is not even how I should be thinking. But from the way things are going, I thought this one was going to be more fun, and it really wasn't. You know, the editing itself just really took me out of the movie. I didn't give a shit about any of the people in the movie. And quite honestly, I thought they brought too many elements into this. Batman, Superman, all that other jazz. Like, even the Joker, I thought, it's like, why would you guys even bring him in here if they're not even being used to any sort of degree in which they have a remarkable stamp on the film? It's just more of, these characters exist in this universe, so we'll put them in here. And it doesn't really work that way sometimes. So as much as they wanted to make a Guardians thing, I think Guardians was well more fleshed out. The music cues were a lot better. If they want to make an anti-hero movie, Deadpool is a way better anti-hero movie. So it is what it is. Style over substance. And it's very weak. I mean, you know, you have David Ayer saying fuck Marvel at the premiere of his movie. It's like, no, man, you need to go and check yourself because this movie is not that good.
You make a movie at least as good as Thor: The Dark World, then we'll talk.
True dad.
So I got a text from a friend of the show, Alan Aguilera, that says...
AG?
Yeah, it says... Well, AA. It says, Alan's issues with Suicide Squad. And he has a whole list here. I'm going to read through that right now. He says, I counted three separate... I counted three super stale male characters punch a female in the face.
That's true.
The soundtrack usage was jarring. Felt like they had a playlist on his shuffle and scan. You heard a few chords and switch it up.
Mm-hmm.
The first 20 minutes or so just felt like it was vomiting cool images. Why would Waller have the top secret file in her bag? Also, why would you just leave Enchantress brother hanging out for some reason in the pantry closet? Why was the squad going to pick up Waller instead of, you know, just going to stop Enchantress? Wasn't their job to protect the world first and foremost and not Waller puppet? And if Deadshot wanted to keep a low profile, why was he dressed as a 70s pimp gangster?
All very valid questions.
Those are just some of the things that I also found issues with when it came to Suicide Squad. Dave, I feel like I've been pretty, not fair,
I've been pretty positive
on
it,
a lot of these movies that have come out of this year. You know, this hasn't been the best summer. I'm not going to say it's been the best summer, but like, you know, for all these movies, you know, we've had Ghostbusters, Bourne, and what, Star Trek come out in the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I've given passes to all of those movies. I legit enjoyed some of them. And like, it's like, it's not like I've gone without trying to like find the good in all these movies. Suicide Squad, I was ready to just be blown away. Just be like, this is it right here. Finally, DC's delivered. We've gotten like just a fantastic, fun movie that's, you know, doesn't try to be too much. It just tries to be what it is. I hated this movie. I don't hate movies very often, Abe.
No, you don't. We talked about this just a couple weeks ago.
I try to champion things for the most part. This movie's awful. Like, I can't fathom how the choices made from like the making of this movie to its release were like every, you know, we're all like positives. Like we saw the drawing board and we're like, yep, perfect, nailed it, next scene, moving on. It just boggles the mind of how not only is this movie like so bad, but like that there's this perceived notion that things about it are like really good. I can give credit to like the actors for being good because they're good actors. I don't expect bad acting from good actors. Like, I expect them to do their job, and they deliver. I mean, I agree that Viola Davis is probably the best thing in this movie. I think I wrote in my review, Will Smith probably gives his best Will Smith performance in a terrible Will Smith movie.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean among the various terrible Will Smith movies, this is his best of those performances.
What was the movie with Russell Crowe where Russell Crowe is the devil?
Winter's Tale.
Winter's Tale.
That doesn't count. Okay. But like movies like, and I know Scott, you like this a lot more than I do, but like Hancock or even I Am Legend. Like movies that I have problems with but I don't think are absolutely terrible. He's very good in those. But this movie, this movie's awful, but he's great in it. And even the biggest surprise to me was Jay Hernandez as El Diablo.
Very low key. Yeah.
I really like Jay Hernandez in this movie. Like I was surprised.
Crazy beautiful Jay Hernandez.
He was in Bad Bombs as well.
Oh wow, he's got two movies.
Yeah.
Quarantines Jay Hernandez. But just from top to bottom, it seems like every bad choice around these actors who are mostly giving it their all was just like to go the bad way with it. Like all the editing in this movie is awful. Scott, you mentioned like the introductions of these characters. Will Smith has three intros.
Yes.
And Margot Robbie both get an intro before the credits, so we already know who they are. Then after the credits, they show us them again, and then they show us both them a third time. Like, what am I learning that I haven't learned the first time around? I don't understand these choices. And like you said already, there's so much exposition throughout the first like half of this movie.
Injection you got. It's a nanite explosive. It's the size of a rice grain, but as powerful as a hand grenade. You disobey me, you die. You try to escape, you die. You otherwise irritate or vex me, and guess what? You die.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
Lady, shut up! This is the deal. You're going somewhere very bad to do something that'll get you killed. But until that happens, you're my problem.
I get it. I walked into this movie knowing the premise. Why am I getting it? Times over and over again. These would be not so problematic if like the rest of the movie delivered on something, but there's nothing it delivers on. There's no action here that's memorable. The villain is among the worst villains of any comic book movie. The look and style of this movie is dark and dingy and ugly compared to just the title cards alone, which are reflect the posters, which are, you know, like candy color. Mm-hmm. Like, where's that movie? Like, why am I being sandwiched like between two movies that look, you know, interesting as far as the credit sequences go with this just ugly movie that I can't see anything in? I'm so glad we didn't see this movie in 3D. Like, that just makes it worse. There's so much like smoke and fog and sparks in the way of me seeing like what's supposed to be creative action sequences. I'm surprised that David Ayer, who's given me action sequences before that I can appreciate, even in something like Sabotage, which is one of the worst movies of that year, had stuff I could see in it.
Right.
This is a big budget superhero movie. I come to see big budget superhero action, but instead I get DC's first zombie movie because that's all I'm watching. I'm watching villains fight literally faceless people who seem to be very easily disposable, yet getting quotes from like the various others like, none of us could take these guys down. And yet every step of the way we see all of these guys taking these guys down with just machine guns. It's like, what?
Or a baseball bat.
Or baseball bats, exactly.
Which boggled my mind.
There's so little sense being made in this movie. The plot is the worst kind of plot. I already mentioned that it only exists because this team exists to begin with, which is a weird way to construct a movie. But then you have like the basic like necessities of like, okay, this team needs to do this, which comes down to some kind of vague rescue mission that we're not really made clear on. And then like, I guess we need to stop the giant glowy blue beam in the sky because other movies do that. So that just makes sense for us. Like, that's what it boils down to.
The Ninja Turtles did it too.
Yeah,
just this past summer,
twice. I think they did it both of their movies.
The Turtles were shot in color.
There's characters that pop in and out that we never see again or never care about. Like Ike Barinholtz has a role.
Yeah,
as like a prison guard who seems like a character that would kind of have some kind of like, you know, result, but instead he just disappears. Like, where there's no
scenes.
Like, we're introduced to this character doing some things, we'd be like, oh, this character, there's clearly going to be some kind of some arc involving, like, what happens in this relationship.
Yeah, or nothing. Some comeuppance.
Yeah. We have, what's his name, RoboCop. Joel Kinnaman steps in, is supposed to be, like, the leader of this team. There's nothing going on with this person that I'm supposed to think, man, I'm glad he's the leader of this team whatsoever. Instead, he just has this southern accent that disappears every now and then, and he eats, like, a big chicken wing at one point and stares somberly into the rain. It's just ridiculous.
And holds guns to his girlfriend's face.
I would like to think that the Joker Harley Quinn stuff could have been something that would like maybe save this movie to be like, well, at least that stuff was entertaining. But instead, that's just a giant wash. The Joker stuff is terrible in this movie. Scott, you're giving Jared Leto all the credit, more credit than I would, because I don't know what he's doing here.
Like, it was A Skittle in a sea of raisins. And it may be an orange-flavored Skittle, but it's a Skittle nonetheless.
His performance is so, like, and his performance being all 10 minutes of it in this 2 hour, 3 minute movie, it's just so, like, grating. And it made me wonder, what is he torturing the rest of the cast for? He doesn't share any screen time with them. Like, why is he sending dead rats or whatever to, like, Will Smith when, like, they have no screen time whatsoever in this movie? What is he proving out of this? It just made me, it made me more irritated by this movie just to know of the levels of the extent of this, what this cast went through to make this movie. It's like, why did you work so hard for this movie? I can't see any of that effort going through.
Yeah.
It's just, it's baffling. It's baffling that this is the movie where Warner Brothers is like, well, we brought in like this trailer editing company to help make an extra cut of this movie, and whatever happened, happened, and here it is. We're releasing this out in the world. It just, I can acknowledge the things that work as far as performances go, or like set design, or what have you, but the idea that this is like the final product that was released as like good enough, that just makes me pissed off. Because it's I'm not one to be like one of these DC fanboy ranters, but it's just like, well, it's just basic movie going experiences in general. It's like, this is a major movie that's supposed to be a part of your giant franchise that you want everyone to desperately like. Why am I not getting something that seems like at least comprehensible? Say what you will about Batman v Superman, but that movie has some ambition to it. Like, and that ultimate cut, yeah, sure, things make more sense, I guess, as far as the plotting. It still has major other issues that I can't get around because the story suddenly makes more sense. But at least that movie's going for something. At least there's, like, there's visuals that I can, like, appreciate from the cinematography. And there's just batshit crazy stuff happening, like that nightmare sequence where it's like, that's something I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. I've seen everything I've seen before in Suicide Squad. It's a retread of all these other action movies that
you've seen. That's absolutely correct, yeah.
It has all these stars doing stuff that you've seen. It's just, it's sad. It's just a sad, it's a sad waste of time. Compared to my excitement for the movie, I mean, it's just, it's a waste. It's a giant waste.
And I was excited for it too, because, you know, the cuts of the trailer with the Queen song Bohemian Rhapsody, very, very good. I was like, this is how you cut a trailer. And especially after Batman vs. Superman, I was like, well, you know, here's to hoping, you know, here's a toast to hope.
I mean, it's the first, the Comic-Con trailer's terrific. Mm-hmm. All the marketing was strong. But I knew I was in deep trouble when the movie starts and I realized, oh God, all the neat, goofy, out of the, you know, unconventional, outside the sandbox scenes are in the prologue. Oh God.
Oof. I should have should have taken a cue from that too. But Aaron, I definitely agree with you that during this movie I was thinking there are way better movies that cost way less. That had the same plot. The Raid 2.
I was going to say, there's two Raid movies that cost like a fraction of the budget of this movie.
Yeah, they cost like $4 million and a penny to make, and they're way better plot-wise and action-wise. And then Dread. Go see Dread. It's way better. This is the same premise. People go into a building to go to the top floor. That's what this premise is. And there's three movies that I just named that are way better than this movie. That, you know, acting-wise... You know, not as great star power, but
I would argue that the Fantastic Four movie is better than this movie.
I would watch it again.
Well, I'd say all three of them are by default because I don't mind the first two Fantastic Four movies, but I'd say all three Fantastic Four movies. Like as flawed as that movie is, it's not good. I'm not arguing that Fantastic Four is a good movie, but for one thing, it makes a level of sense by like from A to B. I get it. It also, it has, like, it's trying to do something different, which I can admire.
I'll give you that.
Like, but this movie, it's not doing anything. It doesn't try to do anything ambitious. The most ambitious thing is casting Jared Leto, apparently. And they don't even have him do much. Like, he's not in the story. His involvement in this movie is to delay the story. You take him out, I might have liked this movie more.
You know what I actually thought during this movie, Aaron? I was thinking, man, Aaron's right. This is basically just another Batman movie, which is kind of a bummer because... I mean, he shows up in the sequence with Will Smith, and then he also shows up like
the movie.
He also shows up a couple times later, including like the mid credits stinger. And I was like, man, this sucks. So, anyway, Scott, you were gonna say?
The problem is, it's not really a movie; it's a video game.
It is.
There's no arc. There's no story being told.
It's just shoot 'em up.
Like, it's basically, and I think this is the problem that Warner Brothers has in general with their franchise. You know, aside from the meddling, and I'll get to that in a second, but that they think that it is good enough for these characters to be on screen together.
Mm-hmm. There's a way that can work, which is like what this movie hints at. There's that scene with Will Smith and Ben Affleck where like Deadshot, This is literally the best scene of the movie. Like, I have no, in my mind, there's no question to me that this is the best scene of the movie. Where Deadshot is walking with his daughter, and like he goes into an alley for whatever reason with his daughter. And
that's what you do in Gotham.
Yeah, and Batman corners him, and Deadshot tries to fight back, but because his daughter's there, he chooses not to. He lets Batman arrest him. But seeing Ben Affleck and Will Smith in their Jersey Girl reunion, credit to Brandon Peters, friend of the show, for that one, because that made me laugh quite a bit on Facebook. That you see these two movie stars together in a scene, and it actually works. It makes me feel like I felt when I watched like Avengers and seeing some of these characters get together for the first time.
Yeah,
that's not a feeling I get. I didn't get that feeling in Batman v Superman, a movie where Batman and Superman meet the first time. But this movie, I somehow got that feeling finally. And somehow the movie around whatever that movie is just doesn't work. Like, they don't seem to capture any of that same essence. And I don't know. I don't understand why. I don't know what script there is for this movie where they thought, this is a good enough plot. Let's get rolling on this.
I think part of it is, quite frankly, and this might be a surface level thing, is that none of them look like their comic book counterparts. There's a very brief scene where, you know, like a blink and you miss it flashback, where Margaret Robbie is wearing the quote-unquote traditional Harley Quinn costume. And it's like, oh my god, that's... You get that stupid high off seeing those characters looking like they do on the page or cartoon in flesh and blood. And the film, as terrible as it is, yada, 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 I think I might have had some more surface-level enjoyment if they hadn't effed over the costume so everybody could buy their own version, their cosplay outfit at Hot Topic. I don't mean there's a joke. I honestly think that's what they did.
I was like, they're definitely going to sell those at Hot Topic.
Especially Amanda Waller.
I mean, her coat is amazing.
Her pantsuits and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant from a merchandising point of view, but I think it neuters the movie. Because you're watching characters that, you know, are called characters that you're aware of, but don't look like the characters you know of, and often don't act like the characters that you know of. So there, you know, you lose that very basic thrill of seeing a comic book come to life. I mean, say what you will about the Marvel films, but generally speaking, those characters all look like they do on the page. And I think that's a huge part of the appeal, frankly.
What about that tinkering?
What was that?
You're going to say something about the studio tinkering.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm speculating here. You know, they had that 3-hour cut of Batman v Superman, which apparently that's the one that got the standing ovation, you know, 6 months ago. And everybody was really excited. They thought, oh, this is going to be great. And yeah, I think seeing that
cut... So they're all happy the movie made a level of sense.
Yeah. I think seeing that cut, I can understand why they thought they had a winner on their hands. You know, they had a big, majestic, spectacular deconstruction of superhero mythology with lots of topical seasoning. They had an introspective Superman story. They had a cool, badass Batman story. And they had Wonder Woman to get the buzz. But then, for whatever reason, they took that movie and cut it down to a Batman-centric 2.5 hours and cut out all the Superman stuff, which was also connecting tissue, so you release a movie that makes no sense. And then the reaction becomes, oh no, this movie's too dark and too grim and too nihilistic. And like, that's not really the problem. That's just also annoying in a film that also doesn't work. You know, if you had had a bad Batman v Superman that you could take your kids to, they would have made more money.
Okay, so this movie.
So you get to this movie, they're like, uh-oh, we better make changes. Well, everybody loved that first trailer that was all funny and peppy. Let's make this movie funnier and lighter, and let's cut out all the icky, jokey Joker Arlie stuff and make that more of a romance opposed to an abusive relationship. And they basically... We'll make a version of this movie that's a glorified music video. We'll add in lots of pop songs because, hey, that's what worked for Guardians of the Galaxy. So now you have a dark and gritty Batman Superman movie, and you have a light and shiny Suicide Squad movie, and you two wrongs don't make a right. The problem that Warner Brothers has always had is that they're constantly reacting to the last, I don't want to say failed, that's too strong of a word here, but failed superhero movie. And they try to course correct with the next one, and it doesn't, you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes you get Batman and Robin, and you course correct to Batman Begins. But sometimes, and I like Batman Forever, don't get me wrong, but they overreacted to Batman Returns, and you got a much campier, lighter, more family-friendly Batman Forever. That one hits, so then they double down on that with Batman and Robin, which shoots themselves in the foot again. So they... overreacted to Man of Steel by going, well, let's make a Batman Superman. Let's throw Batman in there. Let's make it all cool and dark and edgy, and we'll throw in a bunch of cameos from the Justice League. We'll make it like our Avengers. Well, that didn't work, so they effed around with Suicide Squad. I can't imagine how they're going to react to this when it nosedives next weekend, and I think it will.
Yeah.
To Justice League. I think Wonder Woman's safe. It's a period piece. It's set in World War I. It's locked. If it's as good as everybody hopes it is, they're not going to F with it anyway. But I'm terrified at how the mistakes of Suicide Squad will bleed into Justice League. Because we're already seeing the quote-unquote mistakes of Batman v Superman bleeding into Justice League. And, you know, we'll see what comes of that. I think, ironically, our savior is going to be Aquaman. If for no other reason than because they're not going to screw with James Wan. Because James Wan is worth more to them. You know, they need James Wan on the Warner Brothers lot more than he needs to make an Aquaman movie. So I would imagine, you know, he has some kind of final cut clause in his contract. Because otherwise he could walk. And he'll just go make Conjuring movies, which will make Warner Brothers lots of money.
Yeah.
So, go figure. The DC universe is going to be saved by Wonder Woman and Aquaman.
So putting the speculation aside, this movie's terrible.
It's awful. It's awful. Musical choices are the most obvious on-the-nose choices this side of basketball, which was a joke.
Yeah. And, you know, Scott, you were talking and you had mentioned something about families, and I was thinking to myself, man, there was, like, a couple of people that I saw that took their children to this, like, ages 11 to 14. And I just kept thinking, like, this is probably not what they were expecting, because they say shit, like, 50 times.
They say pussies a whole lot of times.
Yeah,
and like,
they
a really distracting. It's like, why are you, like, this seems like a weird, and, like, and a bit, like, in our PG-13 action movie, like, this keeps happening. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know how that got really got bypassed. And again, I agree with you, Aaron. That
yeah, no blood, exactly.
Choices, yeah, the musical choices, they also cuss in the musical choices. So it's like, I'm not against cussing, but in a movie in which it's PG-13, and you know that the audience for this is probably going to be from that 20 to 30, and children underneath or under 18 with their families, it's like, what the fuck, David Ayer? Why did you make this? Like, you deserve a lot of the blame. You wrote it and you directed it. So,
like, this is the thing where it's like, I'm not going to keep going on speculation. I'm going by David Ayer, who he stands by. This is his cut of the movie. And I hold on. I am happy for him to be professional as possible as far as this goes, compared to someone like Josh Trank last year of Fantastic Four, who bites the hand that feeds, and who knows what kind of career he's going to have at this point. Well, what do you think, Scott? I mean, like,
I think that Hollywood Reporter article that came out, like, right when the embargo broke, I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
I think that was him playing the best defense, you know, on the side that he can. So the world knows that it was the trailer companies that screwed up his movie and not him. Now, having said that, his original cut may have also been bad in various ways.
I find it hard to believe that Warner Brothers would take a movie that they thought to be good, like, that truly was good, and cut it away anyway. Like, it's one thing to cut Batman v Superman. I can see where the problems are with that, at least try to whittle it down to something, regardless of standing ovations. But it's like, was there a good movie to begin with Suicide Squad? I can't imagine what that would have been.
I can't imagine
what director's cut there is that shows, like, a decidedly different movie, unless there's, like, unless those $1 million of reshoots that we know happened, like, really, really changed this story around in ways that it had a story.
More common and more Adam Beach.
No, I think, and again, speculation, I think the original cut was a much darker, nastier, cynical movie with a lot of Joker Harley stuff that really, for better or worse, rubbed into the old icky, abusive nature of their relationship. And I think that's, you know, by cutting that out, you were left with, you know, a Harley Quinn that is nothing. She's basically a girl in hot pants that beats up people with a baseball bat. And Joker loves her, which is the most mind-boggling, stupid choice you could possibly make, like, in that relationship.
Scott, like, that's one out of seven characters. Like, what other movie is here that would have been good besides, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know either.
Yeah, and it's tough because it's not as though they juggled a lot of characters
on
the screen.
They juggle between like three characters.
Right, exactly. That's why it's a, you know, I actually felt bad for Killer Croc because good costume design... But I couldn't understand any fucking thing said, And also,
yeah, there's a line. He has a line that like few people laughed at. It's like, what did he say? What's the laugh line that I'm supposed to laugh at?
So that's to Scott's point too. There were not a lot of laughs in this movie, so I don't know why you guys did a reshoot. Because if you guys are trying to make things a little bit more lighthearted, you failed at that too.
Okay.
All right.
I hated this movie. I don't use that term lightly.
Wow, I'm waiting for your when you should tell people to see it.
Don't see it. Why?
Wow.
What are you seeing? So you can get a mid-credit scene to make sure you know that Justice
that
League's coming?
That mid-credit scene is ridiculous.
By the way, am I allowed to talk about the mid-credit scene?
Yeah, please.
I love that for the mid-credit scene, they ripped off the Incredible Hulk, which is everybody's least favorite mid-credit scene, and one that they had to retroactively unscrew up down the line. So they can't even get that right!
To be fair, that was the end of the movie. It wasn't a mid-credit scene.
Fair enough.
It should have been a mid-credit. It makes more sense as a mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
If anything, Marvel would re-edit it, so it would be a mid-credit scene.
It was like, of all the quote-unquote credit, you know, whatever you want to call it, mid-credits, cookies, whatever, that they take, you know, let's take the one that nobody likes, that they had to retroactively fix, you know, 3 years later.
Yeah, it would have been, if they took the Iron Man 2 mid-credit scene, that'd be something, right?
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne, walks up and sees, like, a giant wave, like, crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that you should see this. If you're going to get like a dollar rental from Netflix, from Redbox, that's when you should see this movie.
What kills me is that I'm full aware that anybody that sees this movie after hearing anything I say or reading anything I say or hearing anything Scott says or reading anything Scott says will walk out thinking, oh, that wasn't that bad. And good on you. I'm glad you had a good time. I didn't. I look forward to this movie and I thought it was terrible.
Scott, what would you tell people to see this movie?
Buy a ticket to Nerve and sneak into Suicide Squad. Or any movie, you know, anything that needs the help. Nerve, Ghostbusters, whatever.
BFG.
Yeah,
BFG. Yes, fuck yes, BFG. Buy two tickets to BFG and sneak into Suicide Squad.
That sounds great.
Otherwise, don't bother.
Oof. Oh, boy.
Let's move on now.
All right.
Let's get to our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Why Audible? Because you get audiobooks, and they're great.
Yes.
Go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Download a book for free. Check out the service. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book that you download for free. They're available for iTunes, iPhones, MP3 players, any kind of MP3 device in general. You'll love them. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Be a winner.
Read
or listen. audibletrial.com.
Suicide Squad. I don't know if you guys could tell, but Aaron was so depressed during reading that sequence.
You maybe hate reading about the sponsor.
Exactly.
And I love reading about the sponsor.
He does. It's, and he loves reading thing. In general.
It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Let's get to our feedback.
Feedback.
I forgot the first question. Here's our feedback section, where we go over the various questions and answers from our Facebook page, facebook.com/shoutoutpodcast. We had a lot of questions, and you guys gave us answers. We also got you to ask us questions, and we'll give you answers.
Yeah.
Here we go right away. What did you think of Suicide Squad?
Yeah, what did the listeners think of Suicide Squad?
Scott writes, I was looking forward to it, but everyone whose opinions I respect hated it, so I'm passing. Honestly, I haven't been to see a movie in a theater in about 4 years because nothing compels me to go. At least nothing I wouldn't mind just waiting for the cable release for. Okay, so basically he waits at home. He didn't see the movie. April writes, 1 star. The more I think about it, the more angry I am that they conned me out of my money. She also adds, but Margot Robbie is amazing and the music was great. Justin writes, I have not seen it yet, but we'll wait for the Blu-ray. Jason writes, I really enjoyed it. I would like to see it again and see if it holds up on a second viewing.
Jason's also like 15 years old.
Marcus, don't add a qualifier. He gets an opinion.
Was 15, I would have hated this movie too.
Jason gets the respect he deserves. I don't care what age you are. I'm speaking up for you guys, the listeners. Not Abe, who hates all of you. Wouldn't even come
That's
down to the show this weekend for the listeners. Marcus writes, "I wanted to be Guardians of the Galaxy so bad."
It was so bad.
And he also adds, "Oh, and anyone who says they understood the premise or character motivations is lying." Dennis writes, "It looked good for the most part, but in terms of story, characters, and their motivations, yeesh. It was all over the place, which is disappointing since I was hoping this would be the movie that would turn the DC movie universe around. Oh, and I hated Rick Flagg." Alan just put an image of him watching Suicide Squad, which is Macaulay Culkin's face looking at Buzz's girlfriend, I think.
Yeah. And he goes, woof.
Yeah. Rob writes, good acting from Roby and Smith. Leto's method acting didn't help him. Story and character development is a mess. And Wade just simply puts, excrement.
Mm-hmm.
So not a whole lot of differences.
That's
from
all from quote-unquote non-critics, by the
these
way.
Are, yeah,
the critics who have been so,
these
so
are
terrible.
Our, yeah, these are our fans and listeners. And they didn't like it either. So there you go. Next question we asked everybody, what is your favorite team-based movie? Jason writes Dodgeball. Also, Nobody Makes Me Bleed My Own Blood. Dennis writes Ghostbusters. Philip has Hoosiers. April writes Watchmen. Justin writes Tropic Thunder. And lastly, Joe Jans has the American beer drinking team from Beer Fest, of course.
That's a good set of movies. That's so all over the place. I love it. Favorite team leader movie character? Joe writes, was Porkins a team leader? Yeah, he was Red Leader. Jason writes, Batman says he's leading up the upcoming Justice League film. Philip writes the best answer here, Benny the Jet Rodriguez from Sandlot.
I love that answer too. Yeah.
Justin writes Leia. It's a good answer. She's a general now. Dennis writes Star-Lord. Who? Manish writes Danny Ocean and Captain Rogers.
All right. And next question we asked everybody, it's our 250th episode this week, and we want to talk summer movies. What's your favorite summer movie ever or summer movie experience? Manish has recently seen Magic Mike XXL. The audience was eating it up, and the whole theater was out on a high of good music and Channing Tatum.
That's a good answer.
That is.
Yeah.
When the audience has fun and you're there, it's a great time. It actually really adds to the
people
movie.
Applauded at the beginning of Suicide Squad.
And then they groaned at the end. Jason has Suicide Squad and Jason Bourne. Mike Jones has, have to say, although I loved Batman vs. Superman and Secret Life of Pets, Suicide Squad is my favorite so far.
PC and, this summer. I did have to edit the question forever, but not in time, apparently.
Yeah. Philip has Pacific Rim. It was a blast, and it was just what I needed at the time.
I just rewatched Pacific Rim today with my lovely girlfriend.
Cool.
I still really have fun with that movie.
Nice.
Actually, that's more because Guillermo del Toro has like an awesome exhibit at LACMA going on.
At his house, right?
No, at LACMA, at the LA, at the LA County Museum of Art. Like that has like all of his like props from all of his movies and stuff. So we are going to be checking out that out this week.
Cool.
Let's see. Next question. Favorite take on the Joker and why? Dennis writes, Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy's voices have been seared into my brain for a long time now that I consider them to be my Joker and Batman, but Heath's a very close second. That's basically my answer, by the way. April writes, Adam West is my sentimental favorite because it's my childhood, but Heath, I think she meant Mark Hamill, or no, I think she meant Cesar Romero in that example, but Heath made by the Joker a fully realized perfect villain. Jason writes, Mark Hamill because it's what I hear when I read the Joker, and that laugh is so iconic, and he always adds something different when he does it. Joe writes, Heath Ledger, hands down. He took the character from a joke to a serious threat, very haunting. Manish writes, Ledger, he was that rare comic book villain who was scary and thematically interesting. Nippon writes, yes, it's going to be hard to top Heath Ledger. Just writes, not sure I have a favorite yet. Haven't seen anything super compelling. Ledger was pretty good.
Who's the voice of the animated series Batman?
That's Mark Hamill. That's
Mark Hamill. Okay.
Yeah, people keep saying Mark Hamill. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, cool. Now questions for everybody here on the panel. So Scott and Aaron, questions for us. Jason asks us, what movie would you like to, would you love to see be made by the DC Extended Universe and Warner Brothers? Mine would be a Green Arrow film.
So what movie would we like in this universe to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Do we trust them?
It's kind of where I'm sitting right now, too, Scott.
I mean, I got my Batman movies. Like, I've
got. Yeah, you got this trilogy.
Not sure I want them on anything that I like.
I'd love to see like a really cool Swamp Thing movie. I think that if they ever got there, not necessarily in this universe, based off what I've seen so far, but if DC ever was like, hey, let's make Swamp Thing again, I'd like to see a good Swamp Thing movie.
In all honesty, if they made a Swamp Thing movie and they knew it on the nose to be a B movie that they made, that'd be actually really fun.
They need to make one good movie before I start.
That is a solid
answer. Fair enough. Okay. Dennis asks, where would you recommend we watch the Out Now biopic? Congratulations on the 250.
Biopic?
Where would we recommend watch the Out Now biopic?
Oh, you'd have
to IMAX.
IMAX.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
This is IMAX.
3D.
Or maybe the dollar.
IMAX 2D is better.
Or VR.
VR, virtual reality, yeah. Manish asks, what movie universe would you want to live in? That's a good question.
Oh, I have quite a bit of chance of meatballs.
You live on like the little dot underneath.
I saw that question earlier in the day, and I wanted to make sure I didn't forget that answer. Quite a bit of chance of meatballs universe.
That's a good universe to live in.
Yeah, whether it's
sentimentality. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, whether it's if it's based around the town or just in general with that humor going on. Like if I'm me in that universe. That universe. That's where I'm going.
You'd eat sardines.
I feel like that answer is like the modern day equivalent of saying like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I want to go to Claudia and the Chance of Meatballs universe.
I would actually say, I mean, you know, my sentimental thoughts of this movie notwithstanding, the future in Meet the Robinsons seems pretty damn happy.
It does.
And functional and all that stuff.
Yeah, I finally watched that movie.
it's awesome.
Finally?
It's
really?
Huh. I borrowed it from Scott a while back. Okay. I watched it, and I finally watched it. It's pretty good. Abe?
What?
Do you have a universe you want to live in?
Oh, no, I like your Cloud of the Chance of Meatballs.
Are you sticking with that? Okay, so we're hanging out?
I actually like that one, yeah.
I'll meet you on Tuesday.
It's an island, but hey, you know, it's not bad.
Is James Caan our father?
He could be your dad.
Marcus asks, I need Abe's thoughts on Draymond's future with the Warriors. I'll take my answer off air. No, you'll take it right here. Abe, your thoughts?
You'll take it right here, Marcus. Draymond, you need to stop sending dick pics out accidentally.
Did that happen?
Yeah,
I don't know basketball.
That just happened like last week, and then certainly I'm sure that you'll be fine. But just try and keep your social media in check. All right, next question for everybody here. Philip asks: High concept seems to be a commonly misunderstood term. How do you define it?
High concept is basically being able to establish a movie's premise in a log line that has something that's incredibly catchy.
That's really it.
That's all there is to it.
For example, cops chase thieves or chase magicians that steal shit during their show.
Yeah. And now you see me. There you go.
Batman versus Superman.
I mean, there's a bomb on a bus that can't slow down. I mean, you just rattle it off and, you know, green light the movie. It's an understandable thing. I mean, people want to confuse high concepts with highly complicated ideas for a whole movie universe that need to be separated out into multiple films or what have you. Like, that's not high concept. That's just setting up a premise. Something like Inception isn't necessarily high concept. It's complicated. It's fantastical. It has a lot of ideas, but that doesn't make it a go-to idea that you can just roll off.
It's the Italian Job in your dreams.
I mean, if you can boil it down like that, that's how you get a green light. But as far as high concept goes, that's not necessarily the same thing. All those Mini Coopers did make it really cool, though. Pone asks, favorite car in a movie?
DeLorean. Time-traveling DeLorean.
Burton Batmobile, 89.
That's actually what I thought, too. Yeah. 89 Batman Batmobile.
Or the ride that Penguin has to drive the Batmobile in Batman Returns.
Or the duck.
That was like a 25-cent like supermarket store wind-up machine. Yeah. And last question from Justin: if you guys could take one movie from each genre to a desert island, what choices would you take?
Boy, this is a classic, whole other. This is another podcast.
Classic desert island question.
If you could take one movie from each genre to a desert island, what are your choices? What choices do you make? Okay, here I'm going to do this. I'm going to rattle off genres, and you guys.
I'm going to write them down.
I'm going to name a genre, and you guys name a movie. Okay.
All right. Let's do
action.
This. Predator.
Mm.
That's the first one.
Mask of Zorro.
Die Hard. Comedy.
Ace Ventura.
Kumar.
What'd you say,
Abe? Ace Ventura.
Big Lebowski. Drama.
Who the fuck would want to watch a drama on a deserted island?
You want to mix it up. Cast away. We both did.
Oh, fucking Sophie's Choice.
Boom. Abe and I linked in on that one. Cast away. Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Star Wars. Mm. Any. Well, those first three.
Yeah. Contact.
Yeah, Contact.
Horror.
Halloween.
Psycho.
Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, nailed it, I think, guys.
Boom. There you go.
Does anything?
It's probably some like subgenres, but we got the main ones from Blockbuster.
Based off future classic Amazing Spider-Man, there's only so many stories you can tell in one genre. The teacher at the end of that movie told
you. Can't be a fan of the heart either.
Thank you. All right, that was all the questions we got this week. Thank you, guys. That was a lot of good questions. We appreciate the congratulations.
Feedback.
Yeah, we appreciate all the listeners every week chiming in on the, you know, we get a lot of the same listeners filling in the answers every week, and we really appreciate that always. We look forward to getting more.
We know there's lurkers there, though. We know the people that just listen that don't want reply to the questions, and we appreciate you, too.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate all the listeners. I know that not everyone participates in the same way, but we appreciate everyone that listens to this show. And with that in mind, let's get to our special segment for the week.
Yeah.
In lieu of games, I'm sorry. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about summer movies, specifically our favorite summer movies that we've actually been alive during the summer to see. Obviously, we're not, you know, old men that were able to necessarily see, like, Jaws opening weekend.
No, I was there.
Not to date ourselves or what have you, but you know, there's a lot of summer movies we have been able to see over our lifetime, and I'm sure we all had various experiences with them, and not all those movies need to be, you know, amazing movies or what have you, but I figured why not go over, you know, we're in the middle of the summer. We're talking about summer movies on a weekly basis right now. Why don't we go over like what we thought are, you know, some of our like favorite summer movies or summer movie experiences? And I know I have a list of things here. Not all of them have stories or whatnot. Some are just movies I can recall just really enjoying during the summer. And I've asked you guys also to kind of participate in this, obviously. So I want to start with Scott. Scott, what's one of the movies on your list that you
think? Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
That was a truly holy shit. I had no idea this movie would be anywhere near this good experience.
That's good to hear.
Abe?
Jurassic Park. It still probably is one of my favorite movie-going experiences from the summertime when we went to a theater and got those kids' meals with popcorn, a fruit snack, and a little drink. And I'm still scared every time what's his face? Mr. Arnold's arm drops down on Laura Dern.
Yeah. I also have Jurassic Park on my list. Scott, did you think of Jurassic
Park? Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
that's
my
favorite movie-going experience.
Yeah. Right,
okay. Yeah, that's a top-tier one for me. It's one where I can remember I saw it a couple times in theaters. I remember being, like, I think I was fairly, not ambivalent, but I was a little, like, worried at the time of, like, what am I getting into? I was the kind of kid that, like, I love dinosaurs at that time, but at the same time, I was like, is this going to be scary? How much dinosaur action are we talking here? Yeah, I watched it. Was like
Dino damage.
Dino DNA.
I love that.
I watched that movie, and you know, being as impressed as I was, just thinking, man, this is just a really good, fun time at the movies. Mm-hmm. As far as I processed that, the age I was, but yeah, I certainly responded.
Hey, man, I just rewatched Jurassic Park again on Netflix a couple weeks ago. It's still very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I have.
What's up?
For sure. Yeah. Even though those gallimimuses, they don't look amazing anymore, but you know, it's still a fun scene. Look at the blood. That's what Tim says. I'm going to name one right now. Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Okay.
I saw this movie the first time. Not all these one have stories. But this one does. I saw this movie the first time in Philadelphia. I was there with my dad. We just got back from a vacation in the Caribbean, and we stopped.
In West Philadelphia?
Born and raised on the playgrounds where I spent most of my days. But we were on like a layover, and we had like a long layover to get to the next place. So we went to the movies. It was raining out. Even though it was the summer, it was raining in Philadelphia, and we saw King Arthur, and then we're like, let's go see Anchorman. So we jumped over to Anchorman, and my dad, we cracked up laughing at this movie, and I proceeded to see Anchorman like a good three more times in theaters before I left theaters. I've always loved Anchorman as far as the kind of absurdist sense of humor that Adam McKay and, you know, his whole team were going for in that one. I can acknowledge where its shortcomings are, but it doesn't take away from the kind of joy I get from just the various one-liners and scenes that I can keep thinking of. Scott, how about you? Another one? I'm enjoying picking things at random as opposed to doing...
Me too. Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense.
Ooh, nice.
Heard it was good. I heard there was some kind of twist, but I didn't know what. Saw it opening night in a packed audience, and I didn't see it coming until it was revealed. But more importantly, I freaking loved the movie. I saw it three times that summer in theaters. To me, it is far more than just the twist. I've always, you know, in retrospect, you know, defended the movie, defended him, Shyamalan. I still think it's one of the all-time great studio pictures of the 90s. the last three scenes of that movie, the play, the car, and then the big reveal, are just, they still are huge gut punches, even 16, 17 years later.
Yeah. I think we just talked about Sixth Sense maybe a couple weeks ago.
It seems to come up quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, but we definitely agree that it still holds up.
Yep.
Double feature here. This is back when I was young enough to and brave enough and had enough time in my summer time to go double.
Before you started that business that you're always busy with.
Yeah, exactly. Before I turned
before you
into
put on
Vincent
your little kid suspenders.
Man. Yeah, Vincent Adultman. I did a business at the stock market, but no, it was Spawn and Men in Black.
Spawn and Men in Black. Yeah.
Spawn.
Spawn.
So I remember we I called up
Michael Jai White.
Called up my buddy, and I was like, hey, Matt, do you want to go see Spawn? He's like, yo, you know, there's like, yeah, doesn't that deal with hell? And I was like, no, we're going to go see Men in Black, and then we're going to jump into Spawn. So he's like, all right, let's go do it. And Men in Black was cool. It was great. Still loved that mosquito flying sequence in the beginning. And then we watched Spawn, and I remember thinking, like, this is not that good. So, so even as a, what was I, like 12?
You know 12 what? I saw Spawn with my mom and proceeded to buy the VHS. So there you go.
Well, I mean, the thing is, my brother, we were really into comics, and I still kind of am into the animation stuff. But my older brother, he brought us like the Spawn action movie figurines, and I still have that somewhere. So
yeah. Men in Black that's one where I feel like I like Men in Black enough, but I feel like I was annoyed at the time because I feel like the trailer promised to be something different as far as the presentation of that movie. This will make sense in a second because, you know, that trailer is like Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith walking in suits stern and like the Men in Black logo is all big and emboldened. And then when I see the movie, it's like starts out with this really like quirky Danny Elfman score and the fonts all the font is the font of the title. Apparently I've had a big deal of fonts this year between Batman and Superman and now my Men in Black story. But the font was all like goofy and weird compared to what the trailer was.
Beetlejuice-like.
Yeah, it looked like Beetlejuice. And I'm like, what is this movie? Now, you know, there's a preceding 90 minutes that I was very entertained by, but I was like, what movie have I been set up for here?
Yeah.
I have another one. Mm-hmm. It is Matrix Reloaded.
Oh, okay.
Matrix Reloaded is one of my favorite movies ever. It's on that long list, but still. It's a movie where, despite the various criticisms that I suddenly learned about the day after I saw The Matrix Reloaded, when I saw The Matrix Reloaded, I saw a movie that blew the entire world of The Matrix wide open to me, where the first movie, which I loved, Matrix was at that time like my favorite movie. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah, Matrix, this is amazing. That, you know, I was that kind of teenager. Matrix Reloaded comes out, and I'm like, wow, that Zion place they hinted at in the first movie is way better than just a cave with a couple people in it. It has mech warriors and all kinds of stuff. And it's just that was just like one of the things. Like there was so much like visual greatness that was going on from the Wachowskis that I appreciated from this movie and still do. I haven't changed my mind about this. I think Reloaded is a fantastic summer movie, and I find it a shame that so many people seem to be down on the sequels to these movies. Where I found The Matrix Reloaded specifically, Revolutions, yeah, I can understand the flaws there. I still like it, but it's not as good. But Reloaded, I was just like, this movie just amazed me. I was taken aback by how good that movie was in my eyes.
That was when you were 26, right?
I felt similarly about Star Wars Episode One, by the way, too.
Yeah, that's also on my list.
I was not. Yeah, okay. Well, why don't you go that one? What do you think?
Episode One, 1999. That was a great summer because Aaron doesn't remember this, but there were a lot of Pepsi promotions. So you'd try and collect all the cans from Pepsi, Mountain Dew, and whatever else, and they had all the characters on them. But no, I remember just waiting in really hot lines because it was outdoors and it was like 100 degrees. And we didn't get to sit next to each other. Me and my friend, we didn't get to sit next to each other because the theaters were packed. But I remember watching it and I was thinking like, oh, all right, it's okay. So, you know, it wasn't as though I had seen the original three and I liked those. But then this one, I was like, it's okay.
It's weird because I saw Star Wars and I have like no story behind it. Like my dad and I went and walked in. There was no line. Like we just walked.
No line?
There was no line. Like there was.
Did you watch it opening week?
We saw it. I saw it opening day, but it was like a probably like a 7 o'clock, 7:30 show or whatever. I think it was just playing on every screen at that point, so it wasn't really much of an issue. But we just kind of walked in and I enjoyed it. I was a huge Star Wars fan. I was then, and I didn't walk out thinking, man, this is just as good as the trilogy, but I didn't think of it as average. I just thought, wow, that was really cool. And that was it. That was my reaction. And then once again, the weekend after that ends and I get back to school, everyone else is talking about it too. And so many people have far different opinions than I thought on episode one, apparently.
All their trapper keepers were of Anakin?
Not anymore. They're just in a big bonfire at school.
Oh, okay.
Scott, do you have another one?
Well, I mean, you know, it's no secret I love Mask of Zorro. I saw it twice in 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Saw it Friday night, opening night with a friend of mine, and then I took my dad on that Saturday night because I knew he would like it. My dad and I actually went to Star Wars Episode One midnight screening because we were with a family friend who was handicapped. We got right in and got the best seats in the house.
Booyah!
Yeah. And then for episode two...
Walking past everybody, too.
Yeah. And for episode two, I was in college, and my dad drove up, and he went with me and my friends at the midnight for that one.
At midnight? Wow. Back when they used midnight screenings.
Spider-Man was an interesting experience. I don't mean that, but it's opening night, and I still to this day remember the weird sensation and... you know, chill, excitement, whatever, you know, when the credits came up and the Danny Elfman theme started playing, I'm like, I couldn't, it was just so unreal that I was actually watching the Spider-Man movie. Because as someone that, you know, movie magazines, Starlog premiere or whatever, they were always about to make a Spider-Man movie. They were, you know, been caught, you know, pardon the pun, they were caught in legal webs for like 20 years. And this was, you know, 13 years after Batman. And it was just so unreal that here I was actually watching the Spider-Man movie. And it was pretty good. I mean, it's no secret I'm a huge fan of it. And that's something that I talk about a lot is that, you know, with Hollywood, you know, constantly rebooting this franchise or, you know, you can't beat the first time. You know, seeing Spider-Man on screen for the first time is an entirely different thrill from seeing him on screen for the, you know, eighth time.
You know, it's funny because, like, I so wanted to have that experience, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this on our commentary track. Dive back into our commentary track to find our original commentary for Spider-Man, which I believe we're all on.
Yes.
You know, I really wanted to like Spider-Man. I'm a huge Spider-Man. I'm trying to count because I might have more. I have two Spider-Man posters behind me in my room alone. I'm a big Spider-Man fan. Spider-Man, besides Batman, has always been one of my favorite superheroes. And I really wanted to have that fun time with the first Spider-Man movie. But I ended up walking out like a lot of the nerds on Rotten Tomatoes these days, or the nerds complaining about Rotten Tomatoes these days, where I felt like I was complaining about things that weren't from the comics more than I was about what the movie I saw. Which is a shame. I like it more now. But like the initial viewing, I just wasn't like huge on it. I still have issues with that movie, but I certainly acknowledge it for being as good as it is for what it's doing. I think, like, Scott, you and I both agree that Willem Dafoe is amazing in that movie.
Yes.
Out of costume.
Yes.
But you know what? Because I know you have problems with this movie. I fucking love Spider-Man 2. Like, I walked into that movie, and I'm not alone in this, but that movie, like, that movie wowed me. Like, that movie, I was like, I can't believe how good this is. Like, that's where I got that feeling from. Like, I really felt it with that one.
Well, quick one, Forrest Gump. I know we're all supposed to hate this movie now, but sorry. I know it's kind of evil, and especially how it's been interpreted by the masses for the last, you know, 20 years.
It's really weird how the tide has changed on Forrest Gump. But
as someone that kind of took it at face value, or as a very dark comedy about the sort of arbitrary nature of American quote-unquote exceptionalism, you know, basically it was like, you know, the Henry Grimes episode of The Simpsons.
Frank Grimes.
Frank Grimes, sorry.
We get our Simpsons references right around here.
But, you know, it's not that, you know, yeah, I think it works wonderfully as a drama. It's very emotional. It's very moving. But that was one where I didn't see it opening weekend because, you know, I was 14, didn't have a car. And we were on vacation, and my brother's best friend basically says, oh, I saw it a couple days ago. It's the best movie I've ever seen. I was like, oh, okay, that's hyperbole, but okay, whatever. And the film did about $35 million in its five-day opening weekend, opened on a Wednesday. We saw it that Tuesday, middle of the afternoon. We end up sitting at the very front row because it's sold out to the gills. And that's when I knew, holy shit, this one's going to play all summer. Shrek is another one. I knew that was going to be the biggest movie this summer when the film ends and every single person is at least a little bit dancing to I'm a Believer as they go out the theater.
Yeah. Shrek is also on my list, by the way. Shrek was an amazing summer movie experience. I saw that with my family, and there was so much adult meta humor in there, and I was just, I was actually kind of blown away that something could be this witty for it, for an animated movie, and I loved it. I still enjoy, we still make references to that Shrek face when he's talking to Donkey, when Fiona's talking, and he does like Donkey. that long face to Donkey. But and we still use you cut me deep, just whenever somebody gets pissed off in our group. But no, I really enjoyed Shrek as well.
I don't get to use this enough, but I just love towards the end when Shrek, like, he's trying to get psyched up with Donkey, and Donkey's like, "Do you want to love her? Yes. Do you want to hold her? Yes. Then you got to try." Like, it just it's like. I was so surprised to learn that Mike Myers and Eddie Murphy had, like, never met before the premiere of that movie. Because it's like, that chemistry's so spectacular between Donkey and Shrek in that film. Mm-hmm. I have no story regarding my seeing. I saw it, like 2 weeks later, and the lights came on during it. And then they turned off. Like, it was like, that's annoying. That's the main memory I have from Shrek. Besides,
did you get another free movie pass?
No, but I did love them. I mean, it's a great movie. I did love the movie. It was just like, that's the main memory I take away from Shrek. The fact that the lights came off during the movie. Scott, you mentioned a movie that you saw. What more? Legend of Zorro, Mask of Zorro, that you saw twice in 2 days.
Yeah,
I saw Inglourious Basterds twice in 2 days. I saw Inglourious Basterds opening day. I was like, this is another amazing Tarantino movie, probably his best yet, as far as a director. I still hold on to that fact. And then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go see that movie again, and I did, because I absolutely loved Inglourious Basterds, and it is a summer blockbuster, which is something I wouldn't have thought that was going to be happening before I saw that movie, but then it turned out to be like this, maybe like, what, 300 worldwide or something like that? It's like,
it was big.
Yeah.
Giant.
Yeah. Another movie, Apollo 13.
Back in the day.
I don't mention Apollo 13 enough, but I love Apollo 13. I think Apollo 13 is easily Ron Howard's best film. I think it's a terrific story of just kind of, you know, triumph in the wake of, you know, never ending threats when it comes to space travel. I love the idea that it is a drama about people in a room, people in two rooms, essentially. It has a great cast. It's incredibly well acted, has a great score. The effects are great. Everything about Apollo 13 to me, a movie that lacks anything in the way of kind of giant action sequences or anything else, is just about people trying to deal with a situation and coming up with solutions. And it's based on fact. And it works. I love watching Apollo 13. I love watching the Blu-ray. I've listened to that commentary featuring Jim Lovell and his wife multiple times, because it's really interesting to listen to that and very fun. It is a movie that's very dear to me. I've saw that movie multiple times in the summer of 1995, right?
Yeah.
Because and I think I almost saw it multiple times because I hated Stargate so much out of spite.
One of my own heart. I mean, obviously, you know, I've got like several Batman movies on this list for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, the Batman series, both of them, are just, you know, the prototypical summer movies.
Yeah.
I mean, in its purest form, for better or worse. I saw the first Batman on the Saturday of its opening weekend. I saw Batman Returns the night before. That was my first advanced night screening. And the only humorous anecdote I have of that is that I had been invited to see it at a birthday party that Saturday. And my dad was like, oh, well, you know, there's a 9 o'clock showing tonight, but oh, you're not going to want to see it again because you're seeing it on Saturday. And I didn't say anything, but inside I'm thinking, are you fucking kidding me? Are you nuts? Of course I want to see it tonight. Batman Forever was my first midnight screening.
Batman Forever was also probably my first midnight screening. I saw that with my mom, and we sat in the very front row. But you know what? She wanted me to see the movie. She wanted us to go see the movie on opening night. She didn't care. We saw it, and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
And then Batman and Robin I saw the weekend after its opening. Because, you know, whatever. You know, it's... time heals all wounds.
Yeah, you had to wait for your bat credit card to come in the mail.
Exactly.
What other movies opened around the same time? I know My Best Friend's Wedding did, because I saw that.
My Best Friend's Wedding was the same weekend.
I saw those at the same on the same day.
You saw My Best Friend's Wedding in theaters?
I think that's a fun movie. I really like My Best Friend.
I enjoyed that a lot. It's just like, I don't recall it being in theaters. I remember watching it on film. And that's where I love I Say a Little Prayer for You.
What else opened around?
It came out the weekend after Speed 2 and the weekend before Hercules and Face Off. Face Off is awesome. Face Off. Right?
Yeah. Face Off, yeah, Face Off. What Face Off is on my honorable mentions because I don't want to get to all these movies I have, but I love seeing Face Off.
I didn't see it in theaters, but I watched it on VHS, and I love that movie.
Face Off is the only Face Off is the only one of the Nick Cage action trilogy that I didn't see in theater, or that I did see in theaters. I didn't see The Rock or Con Air in theaters. Scott, I've talked about Batman movies before.
Yep.
But yeah, the first Batman movie, I've many times said it's my earliest memory in life, as far as like what I can think back to. I just talked about Batman Forever. The Dark Knight I saw at 3 a.m. because I was not aware of how fast those tickets were selling at the time. So we saw the 3 a.m. IMAX showing because we missed the tickets for the midnight showing. And you know what? I stayed the hell up and I watched the whole thing. I came back at 6 a.m., got some sleep, and saw it again that night. So there you go. Love The Dark Knight all day. What else? I mean, I can go on with like superhero movies. That's why I've tried to avoid them for the most part.
Yeah.
But I will mention X2. X2 was a fantastic experience.
Yeah.
That was a birthday movie for me that came out like the week of my birthday. And that was a great time to get like, we got like a bunch of my friends together. We all saw it and we had a blast of it. Nightcrawler, my favorite X-Men, got a big showcase scene to start this thing off.
Yeah,
it's like,
was great.
This movie delivered on everything that X-Men I thought was fine. And then this was like, this is much like Spider-Man 2, actually. Like,
yeah,
this
that's
the movie
how I
that
felt.
Delivered for me. Like, this is like what got me what I wanted to see in these kind of movies.
This is true. I echo all your sentiments of the Batman movies. You know, I like those good summer movies. I'm going to throw in Finding Nemo. That was something that me and my sister watched on a Tuesday in an empty theater, she and I. And I remember I was like, I don't know if there's anybody here, so you sit here while I make sure that there's nobody here to sneak up and jump us while we're sitting in this empty theater. There's nobody there, so she and I just watched this. And I was amazed by the water animation. I still like that's still one of my top three Pixar movies.
I saw Finding Nemo in Utah with my dad.
Interesting.
Yeah,
a lot of traveling and dad movies.
Yeah, I've most of the especially the older ones I can see, older ones 2003. I've seen a lot of these with my parents. Not because like I needed mommy to go to the movies, because we like seeing movies. That's why I bring up Mom's Movie Corner or Mom's Movie Minute and Dad's Movie Corner on this show because we like seeing movies. But yeah, Finding Nemo I saw in Utah. We just got back from a river rafting trip actually. And
I'm glad you survived.
Yeah, and that was out, and Pirates was out, and Pirates was like sold out, so we stopped Finding Nemo. And I had no like anticipation for it or whatnot. I was just like, all right, that's another animated Pixar movie. They tend to be good. I'm coming off of Monsters Inc. and A Bug's Life, which are like, those are fine, but it's like, you know, I got the Toy Stories, those are good, but it's not like, Pixar to me wasn't that like the, you know, God giveth a movie studio and they gave Pixar. It was just like, oh, they make pretty good movies every now and then. So I saw Finding Nemo and I was floored by how good that movie was. I thought the screenplay was so incredibly witty as far as the bantering going on between the various fish, as well as the animation and everything. And I was at that point where I had like just seen some Albert Brooks movies. My dad had introduced me to Albert Brooks at that point. So I'm like, this is like fantastic. I'm getting this whole movie with this guy I suddenly said really like. So yeah, I was won over very instantly by Finding Nemo, and it is pretty much my favorite Pixar movie to this day.
Obviously, you know, as these get further and further, it's become, oh, saw that at press screening, which is you know, an entirely different dynamic.
It is, but there's, I mean, the one I can think of offhand as far as a press screening goes, where I was still like, my God, this is amazing, was Mad Max: Fury Road.
That's the last one on my list.
There you go. I mean, it had all those trailers, right? It was like, you know, we're expecting something here. But yeah, you and I sat together.
Yeah.
The movie was amazing. Like, it delivered everything.
I didn't see that one coming. Because, you know, I have no particular fondness either way for the franchise. You know, it just, you know, the trailer looked neat, but whatever. And it just floored me. It floored all of us.
I mean, I was expecting good action because it's hard to be like, no, there was no way that, like, those trailers were showing me, like, just that. And then there would be no good action after that. But, like, yeah, it delivered on the action and then some as far as story, character. As minimal as it may seem, it's just there's so much going on underneath the surface that I just really truly enjoyed about it.
Captain America: The First Avenger, press screening, but junket screening as a favor because the press screening was on my wife's birthday, Wendy's birthday. Mm-hmm. So they did me a favor, and that was a rare situation where even though I was, you know, critiquing, you know, still for fun at the point, but doing that for, you know, 3 years or so. That was a rare occasion where I saw a big movie before the embargo broke, so I had no idea. I had very little idea of what I was going to see. And I loved it. that was the movie that you know, that was the first Marvel movie that I loved. You know, I wasn't crazy about Iron Man. I didn't like Incredible Hulk at all. I wasn't thrilled with Iron Man 2, and Thor was fine. It was good. America was the one that was the one that made me a believer.
For the record, I saw Incredible Hulk with my dad during the weekend of my college graduation.
You know, Scott, to your point about Captain America, it certainly is one of those things where I wasn't that familiar with the character, and at the time, Chris Evans was coming up, and I'd only seen him in, like, not another teen movie, and some of these other smaller things that he had done. So I was thinking to myself, I'm not really sure about this, and I really liked it. And Joe Johnson directed it, Aaron and I, we talked about it on the podcast, but yeah, I think it was a really good choice. And I still remember that I was really floored when Agent Carter comes out with her red dress, because everything was so drab at that time. Not that it was boring, but everyone's wearing muted colors.
Yeah, the design of the World War II-ness.
Brown, khaki, and whatever else. And then here she is in red, and I was like, I am super in love, too. I would definitely know how Steve Rogers feels at this exact moment.
You know, speaking of Joe Johnston, I am a huge Rocketeer fan, and I do have a memory of seeing that movie. It's very vague, but I remember seeing that movie, but I also remember having, like, there was, like, a comic/audio thing for it, where I had this, like, a comic book, and you could play a tape, and it would, like, kind of go, like, narrate the comic book for it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the memory I have from Rocketeer, which I know is a, you know, that was a big summer flop, essentially, but it's a good movie.
Isn't it getting a re-release or something?
No, they're making another. They're making a sequel.
Tier 2.
They're making a sequel with a black female lead.
Oh, cool.
Because screw you, everyone else. We'll do whatever Rocketeer we want to.
Well, that's because Disney can. Why not?
What gets me about something like that, not gets me, what makes me, what gets
you
me
sound
about,
like an old man there.
Well, what gets me about the, about what people could kind of bring up to that, it's like, they're just doing this because they want to, like, you know, have that diversity thing so people don't complain or whatever. And I think, well, what if that is the case? Like, what's the problem? Like, that is something that needs to be addressed. Like, as far as, like, yeah, they are doing it because of that. So what? Like, what's the problem?
Well, not to get all, you know, soapboxy in front of people that I know agree with me anyway, but, you know, I've been pandered to my entire life. Iron Man 3.
They make a lot of short Jew movies?
Scott's nice.
Moving on. No, Iron Man 3, all media, so not remotely the first, you know, chunk of people to see it. But nonetheless, I went into that movie completely cold about its plot twist. And I gave them a little bit of grief beforehand for giving away the Pepper Potts and the Iron Man suit thing. And they pulled the rug out from under me. And I have given them huge huzzas ever since for that marketing campaign that used the Pepper Pot thing as a giant distraction for the Mandarin twist.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, Shane Black would have got those death threats a lot sooner if they didn't hide that Mandarin twist. Abe, you got one last one you want to
go? Yeah, one last one, sure. I definitely want to add in The Whale Rider, because that was something I watched in the summertime with my brother. And he's like, oh, you definitely have to see this movie. I think he had seen it overseas. He was in the military at that time. And I remember I was like, all right, whatever, dude. Like, I've never heard of this small movie, whatever. We wanted to go see it in Long Beach. And I remember I was just, like, bawling by the end of it. And it was also when I realized that Cliff Curtis was a Kiwi.
He's not, in fact, any of the characters that he's played.
Exactly. He is not Latino at all. And I was like, wow, he does a really good New Zealand accent. And I looked it up later. I was like, no, he's from New Zealand.
He's a Maori.
So that was when I was like, Cliff Curtis is an amazing actor. But also, Will Rider is, it is a good movie.
That's a great movie. The last thing I will mention is my favorite double feature, summer double feature of all time, which is, of course, Pixar's Up and Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell. I am very proud of being able to see both of those movies in the same night, and I'm also very proud that I was able to meet Sam Raimi at the premiere for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and tell him that I did, in fact, see Up and Drag Me to Hell back to back, and that was a great double feature.
Cool.
To which you were kind of which you responded with laughter. So,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's what I got. That's what. Yeah.
My wife and I saw Wendy and I saw Drag Me to Hell at a test screening, and they didn't change anything. But it was a rough print of the film, so it actually looked like I was watching, you know, basically a horror movie at 4 in the morning at some kind of syndicated basic network channel.
Yeah.
And it actually made it scarier.
I can see that.
You know, it had that feeling of, you know, you're half awake, it's 4 in the morning, you know, when you're it's 3 in the morning and you're half awake, the gate's pretty freaking scary. And that's I think that actually helped the movie.
That's the kind of movie where it's like, I'm surprised that wasn't 3D. Like, that's the movie's like,
well, it's a couple years too late or too early.
Yeah, because 2009. But it's like when Sam Raimi does horror, he does horror. Like, he doesn't goes all out to just like try to terrify you, regardless if it's like cheap jump scares or not. It's just fun. Like, he has a fun sense of how horror can play to like a big audience when it comes to like over the top B movies.
But, and I wish they had just gotten an R for the hell of it, because of all the crap they got over getting a PG-13. I actually think that hurt the movie among the fan base.
I think it did.
Everybody assumed that it had been neutered in some way.
Yeah, but that unrated cut came out, and it's just a bunch of CG blood. So it's like, no, the movie he made is the best version of that movie.
Yeah.
I want to move on, because we're going along. So I want to quickly ask, what's the worst summer movie experience you can remember?
Suicide Squad?
Yeah. That's up there.
or either movie or experience, I guess. Because Van Helsing is a movie I don't ascribe to guilty pleasures that often, but Van Helsing certainly falls into that kind of category where I acknowledge the various flaws that it has. And I know, Scott, I know you don't like the movie, but I know you're a big Stephen Sommers fan. Or apologist, anyway. I'm in that same kind of camp. But Van Helsing is a movie where it was such a fun experience of watching that movie. It was another birthday movie. I saw it with my friends, and apparently we were the only ones ready to have fun, because we were like laughing and snickering in the corner at the very beginning of that movie, where like what's his name, Dr. Jekyll's like climbing up Notre Dame, and like everyone else apparently needed to take this as serious as possible. We were like, we knew what movie we were watching, and so that's kind of the go-to experience I have when I think of kind of like so bad it's still entertaining type of summer. Abe, did you have one?
Well, it's not really a bad summer movie going experience, but I remember just like the summer of '98, we just wanted to go see a lot of movies, and Wild Wild West was certainly, it was in there. It wasn't a bad movie going experience. I just remember thinking, wow, Will Smith, he did Men in Black and Independence Day, and this one, I don't really know what I just watched, because a lot of mechanical things in the West, doing strange things in the West. I don't know the rest of the lyrics. I was just trying to rap the whole entire thing.
Jim West, Desperado. No.
You don't want this, nada. In any case, yeah, Wild Wild West, I just remember the Burger King promotions for it, too. And for whatever reason, it just got kind of dark in the movie theater at the end. And I don't remember it being a great thing afterward.
Bordello of Blood was a terrible movie that I would have walked out of if I wasn't with people already that wanted to stay. Finding Nemo, and this is kind of complicated, so bear with me for a second.
Okay.
I liked the movie. I saw it with a very close friend of mine, and at that specific time in our relationship, it felt that we were kind of drifting apart. And so I wasn't necessarily in the best mood to see a movie about a father that needs to let go of his son.
Let's take the lights down, guys. Okay, they're
like, no, that's basically, you know, okay. That's basically we Ashton made up, you know, later, and you know, whatever. We're not really close anymore, but you know, that's life. So that was a very good movie that was not a great experience, and it wasn't until I started rewatching it with my daughter when she turned 2-ish and started watching movies that I realized how good it was. I always appreciated it, but that was one that I needed some distance from, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
Summer of 2008, there were a bunch of circumstances where we went to the theater and the audience members were very rude, texty, whatever. Went to see the X-Files on opening day and the fire alarm went off. Went to see Wall-E and you got next to us. And,
you got to see the classic that is X-Men I Want to Believe. Or sorry, X-Files that I Want to Believe.
Yes. And it was just, it was a very, you know, for some reason that summer, all the bad, you know, all the worst scenarios about movie going came true for me over and over and over again. But not much since then. I've been lucky. I've had relatively positive movie going experiences for the last 8 years.
That was a nice little...
nice look, call back to our history of summer movies.
To the summer movies, yeah.
Let's move into what's out now. Presents what's out now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and just a few here actually. First up, A Hologram for the King. This is the Tom Hanks movie that inexplicably came and went out of theaters, despite it starring Tom Hanks. I can understand why from a commercial standpoint, but it's like, wow, there was like nothing to advertise this movie. That said, I kind of like this movie. Scott, did you ever get around to seeing this movie?
I did. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
It's better than the trailers. The trailers were terrible.
Yeah, the trailers are
They were aggressively off-putting.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's fine. Tom Hanks goes to the Middle East and finds himself, essentially. But it does what it does.
My only issue with the movie, and this is a minor one, is that, you know, the film works as an interesting metaphor for the modern movie star that finds that he's somewhat, you know, out of, you know, no longer, you know, of prime value. But it stars Tom Hanks, one of the few guys that still can, you know, pull down a Sully or a Captain Phillips.
Yeah.
The movie, yeah. He's good in it, but it would almost feel better with, like, a Bruce Willis type actor.
I can see, yeah, I can see that.
But again, that's not really a criticism, just sort of...
Yeah. I don't want to go too far into a movie that nobody's seen, but I am curious, like, what other cut exists, because there seems like there's clearly, like, a 3-hour version of this movie based
on,
like Tom Skerritt, who has, like, a role that's been minimized to, like, a scene and a half. So it's like
Picket Fences, Scott, Tom Skerritt?
Yes. Yeah. Ted's Tom Skerritt. Okay.
He was in Ted?
Yeah, I remember. He, what's his name? Someone was holding his daughter hostage or whatever. Like, it's a really random joke.
Okay.
Like Matt Walsh's character, I think he's like, yeah, okay. Regardless. Yeah. 11/22/63. I believe this is the Hulu series starring James Franco.
Oh, James Franco.
Yeah. Yeah. Never got around to it, but I heard good things. I don't have Hulu. I don't have time for that. Supergirl season 1.
I heard it's excellent. Okay.
It's Scott's excellent. A fan. Yeah. I've yet to watch it, and whether or not I'll catch up on 22 episodes of Supergirl will remain to be seen.
Well, you know what? The pilot is good. The next 3 episodes are It gets really good in the back half of the season.
Okay.
Don't rush. Take your time. But it does pay off. And by the end, it's as good as The Flash.
Well, right after I watch all that Arrow, we'll see where things go.
It's better than Arrow.
Okay. And lastly, from Warner Archive, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, classic film with Paul Newman, among others. I like pointing out these Warner Archive releases because they tend to be very good as far as their video and audio goes. So there you go.
Cool.
That's how now what presents out. Now let's go on to Extremely Cool. These are movies now on Netflix that I can point out for you. And a few things here. First up, The Little Prince is now on Netflix. I mentioned this earlier. I quite liked it, but yeah, you can now see The Little Prince on Netflix very easily. David Cross, Making America Great Again. If you're a fan of David Cross, he has a new stand-up special where he's making America great again. So there you go. I did not see this movie, but I heard that it exists. Punk's Dead, SLC Punk 2. I've seen SLC Punk once, and I thought it was a good movie. I have no idea what to think about the sequel to it, but I am curious. I forget if Matthew Lillard's actually in this, but who knows? Any other fans
Wing of SLC? Commander's Matthew Lillard?
SLC Punk's Matthew Lillard.
13 Ghosts, Matthew Lillard.
Summer Catch is Matthew Lillard. And lastly, The Confirmation. I brought this movie up previously on a What's Out Now movie thing, but this is a movie starring Clive Owen. It's from the writer of Nebraska, who made his directorial debut here with this film, where Clive Owen, it's basically a riff on The Bicycle Thief. Mm-hmm. Where Clive Owen and his estranged son get into a situation where he needs to get back some stolen property, and they have like an adventure throughout the weekend, and it's a nice little character drama.
Sounds like a romp.
If you
so, is it happy fun like Pee Wee's Big Adventure, or really depressing like A Better Life?
It's a mix of the two.
Fair enough.
A Better Life. It's not that. That Better Life has some uplifting stuff in it. I like that.
Mm.
It does. It gets to it. It has its moments. Anyway, it's fine. If you like, Abe, I know we're big fans of Nebraska specifically.
Yeah, I love Nebraska.
I think you can check this movie out and see kind of the DNA.
I will.
Tell me what you thought at some point. Next week's show. That was extremely cool. Next week's show. Next week, much to Abe's chagrin, we have Pete's Dragon.
Pete's Dragon!
Because it's either that or Sausage Party. And let's face it, we all want to see Pete's Dragon more than Sausage Party.
That's probably true. Or Florence Foster Jenkins.
The Meryl, I'm sure it would probably be good.
Yeah. I have no idea. Doesn't look bad.
Yeah. I'm a big Stephen Frears fan. I'll see that movie at some point. But yeah, Pete's Dragon is what we're going to talk about next week. So we'll see where that goes. And, actually, I'll be in Vegas next weekend, too, so it'll be a live from Vegas episode. What else? Well, that's it. What should people go and see now? What do you plan to see next? Scott, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Well, by the time this airs, Pete's Dragon will almost be out. Go see Pete's Dragon. If it's playing anywhere near you, Equity is excellent.
All right, Scott, what are you seeing next?
Yeah, what's Scott going to see next?
Oh, I'm seeing Sausage Party on Tuesday. I'm passing on the Florence one.
Okay. Abe, what about you?
Definitely go out and see Secret Life of Pets, if you can. I don't know why I just said that. That was the first one that came to mind.
If you can.
Go see Lights Out. Go give like a low-budget horror movie some
fun. Yeah.
I would recommend Lights Out. I think it's solid.
Yeah. And also go and support Ghostbusters. I mean, those guys, I don't know why they spent $144 million on a movie, but hey, you know what? It's not the character's problem. It's not the female cast that's the problem. But in any case, next, Peace Dragon, Sausage Party. If Hell or High Water is coming out in more of a wide release, I would love to see that as well.
I feel like I've heard nothing but great things about it, and I really wanted to see it before I didn't. So like, I'm gonna try and see it now. Maybe my mom, Anna, and I will all see it together as a great family outing
in Vegas.
Did you see Jason Bourne, by the way? You weren't on that episode.
I didn't yet, no.
Okay.
But I was listening to your review, and now I'm kind of on the fence of whether I'm going to see it.
I was the most positive, I know that. But I know you weren't, like, amazed. You weren't excited about it.
When we were talking about the trailer, I was like, again, why is this movie being made?
Yeah. I am going to continue to recommend Hunt for the Wilder People.
Cool.
Just because I want to keep holding on to that recommendation. I don't even know what else to recommend. I'm so dismayed by Suicide Squad that I've given good reviews to Jason Bourne and Ghostbusters to be like, hey, it's fun enough, go see it. But yeah, I'll stick up for the small guys, Hunt for the Wilder People, and yeah, I'll be seeing Peach Dragon next. Okay, so that's gonna do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe, our 250th episode spectacular. You can find more of my work and my personal blog, thecodedzeek.com. You can find all my written movie reviews there, as well as at wisetheblue.com. You can also find me writing daily over at Screen Rant, and I'm also on Twitter at AaronsPS4. Abe?
You find more fun stuff over at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose, #BojackHorseman.
Scott?
Forbes.com, the ticket booth. That's where all my stuff is. Twitter is at Scott Mendelson. Facebook, Scott Mendelson.
When's your album hitting?
My album?
You have an album?
I'm kidding. I'm just thinking about you singing Queen songs. Anyway. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audio Boom.
Listen to all of the episodes over at HHWLOD, SoundCloud, and Podomatic.
Feel free to email us your thoughts on Suicide Squad or anything else we talked about this episode. Summer memories would be cool, actually, over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, you can write it over on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And of course, there's our Tumblr page. Send us all the gifts you want, all of them.
That site is going to get shut down.
At outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Scott Mendelson, thank you for joining
Scott,
us.
Scott, thank you.
You're very welcome.
It's been great going over the various gripes we've had with Suicide Squad and some summer memories. I look forward to seeing better movies for the rest of the summer, which seem to all be movies, if I'm not mistaken, as far as...
I am really looking forward to Kubo.
Yeah, I mean, Kubo is a movie I've been looking forward to, regardless of whatever
Since we saw the teaser, I was like, yes.
Kubo's a movie I've been looking forward to since Laika released their last movie. Whatever Laika's next movie is, I look forward to that movie.
I know, I was having like some sort of weird panic attack one day. I was like, wait, if people don't go see Laika movies, then they're not going to make movies anymore. We have to find some sort of campaign to make people go see Laika movies.
Yeah, well.
So.
They've already got two more pictures on commission from Focus.
I'm glad about that. I'm glad it has a big cast that makes me hope people are like, well, Matthew McConaughey's in. That's how they talk. Matthew McConaughey's in this, so I get it.
They sound like they're from, like, Whoville.
I loved him in Free State of Jones, so. All right.
Aww, that's no fun.
With all of that out of the way, that's going to do it for this week's episode. So until next time, bicycle, so long.
Bicycle, and goodbye. Bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. 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 I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like. You say black. I say white, you say bar, I say bite, you say shark, I say him and Jaws was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars. You say Rose, I say Royce, you say God, give me a choice. Say Lord, I say Christ, I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein or Superman. I want to ride my bicycle.
bicycle. I want to ride my
bicycle. Races are coming your way.
So forget all your duties on here.
Front bottom girls, they'll be riding today.
So look out for those beauties, oh yeah.
On your marks, get set, go!
Abe,
what?
You have a universe you want to live in?
Oh no, I like your Cloud of the Chinese Meatballs.
Are you sticking with that? Okay, so we're hanging out.
I actually like that one. Yeah,
I'll meet you. I'll meet you on Tuesday.
It's an island, but hey, you know, it's not bad.
Is James Caan our father?
He could be your dad.
Okay.